Today is August 23rd, 2008, and we are at the Amelia Island Museum of History, located at 233 South 3rd Street, Fernandina Beach, Florida, 32034. The following interview is being conducted as part of the Amelia Island Museum of History's Veterans History Project in partnership with the Library of Congress. We are interviewing Gail Elizabeth Davis, who was born Gail Elizabeth Zortia. She was born January 31st, 1958, in Jacksonville, Florida. My name is Bobby Faust, and I will interview the subject on behalf of the Amelia Island Museum of History. Assisting me is Don Hill, who will operate the recording equipment. Gail, we're going to start the interview now. Why don't we just start off by talking about why, at 18 years old, you decided to enlist, and why also you picked the Army to go into the service.
I didn't decide at the age of 18. This was a long process for several years. During high school especially, I wanted to join the armed forces. My father was in the Navy. My oldest brother was in the Navy. And I looked at the armed forces. I chose the Army, one, because I did not want to go in the Navy. I am not a water person. I didn't want to go into the Air Force because at the time I wasn't crazy about planes, but I chose the Army because I saw that it did have opportunities for women for advancement, and I chose the administrative field because that was what I felt like my talents were best. So,
now, where did you go to high school?
West Nassau High School in Callahan, Florida.
Okay. And during your high school, you said that you had already made that decision during your high school years to enlist in the armed forces. What was the reaction of your classmates?
Oh, you'll never do it. You know, women don't do that sort of thing, because this was over 30 years ago, and it just wasn't one of the popular things back then. And several of my friends were like, no, you're not, you'll never do it. And then there were some that said, oh, wow, that's, you know, something to think about. I graduated high school in 1975 at the age of 17 and did not enlist until May of the following year. I took that year off. I tried a hand at college that fall, and it was just not what I wanted to do. And so in May, I went into the delayed entry program, and in September, I left for basic training.
Great. And I assume, but I shouldn't, what was the reaction of your family? I mean, you had all of this military history in your family.
My mother was totally against it, to be honest. She wanted me to do the normal graduate, get married, have grandkids, you know, type thing. My dad, I think, was kind of mixed about it. He was proud about it, but then I think he just didn't want one of his daughters to leave home and to do that sort of thing. But once I did it, the day I enlisted, I didn't tell anybody that's what I was going to do. I went ahead and I just did it. And when I got home, being in a small town, you don't make it home without everybody already knowing about it. And I walked in the door, and my dad looked at me. He says, "So when do you leave?" So, you know, that was in May, and then I left in the end of September.
What was about the reaction of your brothers?
Well, they were all grown and away from home at the time. Oh. It was just my younger sister and I. So I really don't know what their reaction was at the time.
Okay. Well, you said after you enlisted, you went to basic training. Tell us about basic training. Where did you go, and what was it like?
I did basic training at Fort Jackson, South Carolina, Columbia, South Carolina. It was different than it is now. When I went in, the women were separate from the men. There were certain physical training that we didn't do that the men did. We were housed separately. We trained separately. I had two male drill sergeants, which I was thankful for. We had the camaraderie was really unique among the women. We had some that didn't want to tough it out and did find ways of getting out. But for the most part, we stuck it out. I unfortunately injured both my hamstrings during basic, and I was not able to march the parade field at graduation, but I still stood proud on crutches as they marched by. But our training, it was rigorous, but not to the extent that it was impossible. There were many mornings we got up at 4:30 and did not get to bed until midnight. We trained in all sorts of weather. We trained in the rain. We trained in the heat. We did rifle training, grenade training. We did remember the name. the course. We did the obstacle course training. We did rappelling. So basically everything that the men did, we did, except for the more physical attributes that they did, like introductory to parachute jumping, I think was one of the things they did. So it was curtailed for the women more than it was for the men. But for the most part, you know, it was rigorous but not impossible.
You all stayed together in barracks, and much like the men did, and things like that.
The women had their own building. The men had their own building a little ways away. It was not in the same area. Nowadays, they are in the same building, just across the hall, or well, across the way from each other. Uh-huh. So you
ate together? And
no, we did not. We ate at separate times. The men did their thing at one time. We did ours at a separate time. We had no contact with the men.
During basic training, and I'll ask you this question later, but during basic training, did you have the feeling, or was there communicated to you, that women had lots of opportunities, or that there were different kinds of opportunities for men and women?
It was mixed, depending on who you spoke with. I do remember one girl in our company that once we finished basic, she wanted to go airborne. And she started training with the airborne, and she was the only female with the men training. And so they were just opening doors for women back then, more so than they do now. And then there were those that had mixed feelings that the women should not be allowed to do certain things. So it was a trying time as far as, I would say it was more of a
transition time,
correct. They were starting to open doors for women, but still some doors remain closed.
Okay, and then this is, just to clarify, this was in like September
of 1976. Mm-hmm.
Okay, and you said that you had signed up for administration. During basic training, did you get any other specialized training, or did that happen afterwards?
No, that comes afterwards. Your basic training was for training you for the rigors of if you did have to go out into the field, and to get you physically in shape, and to train you on your weapons and your the obstacle course and things that you may face out in the field, the grenade training. Your job training is what they called AIT, which is advanced individual training, and that comes after your basic training. And I did that at Fort Jackson also.
Okay, so tell me about that.
Well, that was, back then, it was a self-paced course. You had manuals that you had to read and follow and pass certain tests, and the quicker you were at it, the quicker you got out. Now I think that has changed, but I was able to, my course was supposed to be 9 weeks long. I was able to complete it in about 3 or 4 weeks.
Wow.
And I would have been the first in my class to graduate, but I had a death in the family that required me to be here. And so I went back, and I missed beating the guy by a day, but that's okay.
So after that training, what happened next?
I stayed at Fort Jackson as a permanent party soldier. My job was in the trainee orders division. Because Fort Jackson is a training post, we typed all the trainee orders. We used the mag card system, which was a very antique computer. We had orders that were already pre-programmed, and it would stop at certain intervals where you could put in the name of the trainee, put where they were going, and that type of thing. But the basic information was already there. You just had to fill in the blanks, more or less. And I stayed with them from January of 77 until April of 78. Basically, it was 8 to 4:30, you know, depending on the seasons, our times changed, but it was a regular job, Monday through Friday, weekends off, unless you had duty. And I got my military driver's license, so when you had guard duty, I got to be the driver instead of one of the ones out in the rain for 2 hours. So, but it was a basic job, you know, normal, like a civilian job. My supervisor was a civilian, and I had one other civilian in my office. They were both wonderful ladies. And then we were in a separate building from my my commander. And he, so I had a military person over us, but I answered to a civilian, and which was new to me. I thought all military posts was all military, but I didn't know the civilians too, which was fine. And we had probably about 10 military in our office, and we all did the trainee orders, and you had the ones that typed, the ones that proofread, and so.
Did, during this period of time, anything of particular interest or anything funny or any particular stories that you have that you wanted to share with us that would give us a flavor for what life was like on the base or anything like that?
I saw snow for the first time because it does snow in South Carolina.
That's true.
Not as bad, though. It wasn't all that bad. I was able to get my car back. That was good. You know, when you're a teenager and you're having to go months without your car. So I had my car. I felt like a human being again, because during basic, you just don't feel human at all. You're treated, or back then anyway, you were treated like you were important, but you weren't important. They were training you to be somebody of importance, but at the moment you were not an individual.
Right.
So being permanent party, it was nice to catch my breath and say, okay, I am a human again. I can get up and get dressed and wear blue jeans on the weekend if I want to. So,
Okay, well, so now we're at 1978, and you were given a new assignment. Would you like to go into that?
I was sent to Yongsan, which is in Seoul, South Korea. I was chosen. When you first get into country, you're in an area called reception, and they determine where you go from there. Because before you get there, you have no idea where you're going, what base you'll be at, what job you'll be doing. So I was in reception for about 5 days, and I was chosen to be assigned to the Armistice Affairs Division, which was attached to 8th Army. And my sole day-to-day job was to assign, reserve, oversee tours to the Panmunjom area.
Oh, wow.
Which was in the DMZ of the demilitarized zone between the north and the south peninsula. So that was my daily job. My other job was when we had, our office was the ones that had meetings with the North and with China. And my job was to go to the meetings, and I did not sit exactly across the table from them, but I sat at a side table, and my job was to prepare the statements for the press and to take them out, you know, for press releases for whatever was spoken at the meeting, whatever might have been said. Whatever major decision may have been made. And that was the most interesting part of my job. And I got to fly helicopters back and forth.
Fly in or fly?
Fly on.
Oh,
fly
okay.
On helicopters. Yeah.
Did you request Korea, or did you request moving from Colombia, or did that?
No, I requested. When I enlisted, we were able to request our permanent duty station, and if it got granted, you know, and so I requested to have my duty station remain at Fort Jackson for the purpose of being able to come home on weekends. Mm-hmm. So while I was at Fort Jackson, I came home about once a month, one weekend a month, if not more, and because it only, you know, it was only a few hours away and about a four-hour drive.
Right.
So I would leave Friday afternoons and then go back up there on Sunday evenings if I did not have duty. So I, having requested that and having it approved and was able to stay there, then Korea was only a one-year tour. Most of your other European tours are for 3 years. So mm-hmm. I was not able to go to those because I did not have 3 years during, you know, in my enlistment left.
Right.
So they sent me to Korea, which I was thankful for. I really enjoyed being in Korean country. I still do enjoy Asian food. I enjoyed the people. I didn't learn a whole lot of words of the language, but, you know, it was just the whole culture was totally different than what I had been used to, and I enjoyed getting to know, you know, and get the people and getting to see the culture and how they lived. And even nowadays, I go back to that, you know, remember how they lived. And I have friends that here in the United States that have shared recipes with me from that country too that I still enjoy.
When you were working, did you work with South Koreans?
Yes, we had. Now, in the front, our office was divided. In front, it was all military, and it was a diverse. There was Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines. And in the back was our Korean office, and we had, I think, probably about 10 or 12 South Koreans that worked in the back. And their purpose was for translation and just anything we needed to anything we needed to come to emerge the two countries, you know, in mm-hmm. a, like a joint effort for what, you know. But yeah, I enjoyed working with them too. So
would your job there still an 8-to-5 kind of job, or
yes,
what
it was?
So during your off times, did you have a chance to really discover the country or get off the base and things like that?
Yep.
How free were you?
I was just as free as I was here. The only difference is Korea had a curfew, and I don't remember the hours, but I want to say it was from about 1 a.m. to 4 a.m., and if you were caught off base in the streets, you were arrested by the Korean nationals, and so you wanted to make sure you were either, if you lived or was visiting off base, you wanted to make sure you were either back on base or somewhere inside before that curfew started. But other than that, you were free to come and go. I visited several areas of the country. I got to go where MASH was. My favorite TV show of all times is MASH because I have that sentimental connection. I was at Weejeonbu, where the original MASH was located. I've been to Rosie's Bar, not to drink, but just to visit,
right.
To see the actual location. So that connection, that's important to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I do have the whole CD set of the MASH TV program because of that. So,
what would you say was the most outstanding things that you took from your experience in Korea? The kind of maybe different attitude towards life or the situation of the armistice and the tensions there that you know, with the Koreans versus the United American point of view.
I don't remember feeling any tensions. I really don't. We were there to do a job. I felt safe. I didn't feel threatened in any way. I had numerous South Korean friends. I had a tailor, Miss Kim, and I had you know, other friends. I felt safe roaming the streets of Seoul or whatever city or mm-hmm. town I happened to be in. I don't really feel that there was any danger, so mm-hmm. to speak.
You said that one of your jobs was to give people tours.
I didn't give the tours. Oh, okay. I scheduled the tours. At Panmunjom, there was a joint security officer, and he was responsible for the actual tours. My job was to schedule the tours, to brief the tourists, to make sure there were restrictions as to what they could wear, where they could go. And so part of my job was to brief them, to schedule the transportation for them there and back, to schedule their actual tour time. And so that was the basis of my that job.
What kind of people did you were there that took these tours? And were there any special stars or anything during your time?
Well, yes, there was. I remember Christopher Walken, the movie actor, and Robert Mitchum. They were filming a movie there. So, and they wanted to visit the area, so I had to schedule. Of course, I did not get to meet them. It was through their agent
advanced
or what.
Their
advanced people that I had to schedule the tour for them. Then there were various athletic teams that were in the country that came and visited. And then there were just the military personnel that were stationed there that wanted to visit. And then there were civilians in the area, so that kind of thing.
Okay. You said that probably the most interesting part of your job was when you attended the meetings between North and South Korea, and, well, between North Korea and the United States and South Korea. Anything particular that you can share with us, kinds of things that went on at these meetings that stick out in your mind?
I know when we were waiting for the meeting to begin, well, first of all, we flew by helicopter up there, and I remember my boss was a colonel, an army colonel. His boss was a two-star admiral, so we would fly, the three of us were in the helo together along with a few other personnel. And when I got off of the helo, I had my briefcase, my colonel's briefcase, and the admiral's briefcase. So, and they had certain, the joint security officer had certain men that, because only men were stationed at Panmunjom. Mm-hmm. There were no women up there. So he had certain men that were assigned to me when I got off the helo to help me carry everything. So that was a perk. And before the meeting, North Korea was very noted for putting on a show. Everything had to be bigger and better than the South or the United States. So, and they had to take more pictures. But I felt like my picture was probably posted all over North Korea. But once, you know, being new to the country, but once you find out that a lot of the times they're taking your picture, they have no film in their camera. It's just for show. And then when you're in the meetings, the table itself, and they have this in the, you know, the agreements that they have. The flags on the tables can only be so high. Well, theirs has to be just a little bit higher. The chairs can only be so big. Theirs had to be, you know, a little bit bigger. You know, so, and their building, whereas we have Freedom House that we, you know, stayed in and stuff, our offices, their building on the behind there was you could see straight through it. Because even though it looks huge, it's not very deep. So it's all, theirs is a lot of show. And they were very, you know, they wanted to be bigger and better than the South Koreans or the United States. But it wasn't until, you know, years later that I realized I could have been in danger at those meetings because, you know, they could be armed and us not know it.
Right.
And I thought, oh, you know, maybe I was in a little bit of danger sitting across from them, you know. But I thoroughly enjoyed that part of my job. I enjoyed going up there. I enjoyed seeing the inner workings of the agreements and how certain issues were handled. And because while I was there, we discovered numerous tunnels. And so that was a big issue, and
wow,
we had numerous meetings over those tunnels. And I also discovered back then how little the United States knew about what was going on over there because, you know, back then a lot of stuff was classified, and we were not able to share with that.
Other than the tunnels, what other kind of issues? Can you give us an idea of the kind of topics that were
I don't. That was the main one that stood out with me. Okay. I know before I got there, there was a tree that two soldiers had, American soldiers had gone to trim and were killed by North Koreans, and that was a major issue. But just any grievance that might be, it mm-hmm. might occur, then we had to have a meeting, and you know.
After Korea, what happened next?
After Korea, I came back to the United States, and I finished my last 6 months at Fort Linderwood, Missouri. I worked in the, I can't remember what it was now, the Division of Resource Management. There you go. And I worked, there were three military. There was the colonel I worked for, me, and one other military person, and 25 civilians. So I was back to working with the mm-hmm. civilians, which was fine. I enjoyed it. We had several that were practical jokers, but, you know, we got along fine. So I finished my last 6 months there and ended my enlistment the end of September.
Did you ever think about making the military a career?
I did, and I had, when I enlisted, my intentions were to make it a career. Unfortunately, I didn't. I wish I had now, looking back. I wish mm-hmm. I had pursued it. But I was young, and I had met a guy, and I got married, and he was in the Air Force. I was in the Army. And one of the things that happened, well, two things in particular that stand out was before I left Korea, the colonel that I worked for, Colonel Kleypas, was getting ready to leave to go to Holland, and he wanted me to go and be his secretary there. And I turned that down because I was coming back to the States and I was getting married, you know. So I turned that down. I wish I hadn't, but I did. Well, when I was at Fort Leonard Wood, a couple of months before I was due to in my term of service, a White House team came and interviewed me. I was one of the top 10 of the United States Army 71 Lima clerk typist that they were interviewing for a White House position to be a part of the White House team. And which was very, you know, interesting, very appealing, and it would have been for 6 years. I would have been able to wear civilian clothes. I would have been on call 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, because there's four teams. There's the presidential team, the first lady's team, the vice presidential team, and then his wife's team. So depending on what team you were on would depend on, you right. know, would determine what your job was. And I asked them one question because I had gotten married, and I said, can you guarantee my husband, who was in the Air Force, would be stationed close by? And they couldn't guarantee that. There was a chance we'd been separated, so I turned it down. And I'm still wearing the footprint because I wish I had stayed. I wish I had done it, but I didn't, because we divorced 5 years later. And so,
did your experiences in the military influence your thinking about war or the military in general, do you think? Or was it your whole life experience that really shaped that?
My thoughts about war back then for me was, I didn't think of it. Mm-hmm. I didn't think of the possibility of us being at war, me going to war. I was serving my country. I was, you know, I was, especially when I was in Korea, I was representing the United States. I was a member of the United States team in a foreign country. But it never occurred to me that I was actually in a war zone. I mean, I didn't think, it was something you just didn't think about.
Right.
You know,
mm-hmm.
I was in a war zone, but it wasn't a combat war zone. Mm-hmm. And to this day, it's still considered a war zone. Now, when I think about serving in war, when you have a child that grows up and joins the military and serving in a war zone, as a mother, you have a little apprehension, but the pride that you take in the fact that they're willing to go and serve overrides everything. So, yeah.
Being that you just brought that up, just for the record, you have how many children?
My husband and I both have, together we have three. I have a son, and he has a son, and then we share a daughter.
Okay, and your daughter, I know, has chosen the military, and I'd want you to elaborate on that. Did either one of the other children choose the military?
My son chose, but it was actually in, but then there were complications, and he had to get out. But my daughter did join. She worked. We homeschooled. We lived in Georgia for about 8 years, and we homeschooled there. And when we moved back to Florida 2.5 years ago, she asked to go to public school, so we did because the schools were better down here. And she worked. She attended school during the day. She took courses through Florida Virtual School at night so she could finish school a year early. She turned 17 in April and graduated in May, and then left for basic training June 5th of 2007. This year she joined the Army Reserves. I had told her that I loved being in the military, but she might not, so she chose to go to the reserves, and then if she liked it, she would go active duty. But her unit was activated and they deployed out back in April, and she turned 18 in April and landed in Iraq May 27th.
Wow.
So she's the youngest American soldier at the moment serving in Iraq. And, you know, I get the reaction that a lot of, especially mothers, is like, oh, that's so sad. You know, I'm so sorry. I don't feel that way. I am very proud because I have faith, and I know that my child is in God's hands wherever she is. So with her serving over there, I feel fine with her being there. I'm very proud of her being there. And it's an honor for her to serve.
Do you think that your experience in the military influenced her decision to go?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And in fact, I was the one who tried their best to talk her out of it. Not because I didn't want her to, but because I didn't want her to do it because I did it. I wanted to make sure it was what she wanted to do. And it was, and it is, and she is going active duty as soon as they get back. Mm. So,
Did your experience in the military affect your future career? What do you do now, and did military training have any impact, do you think, on that?
I would say high school and military combined, because when I was high school, I took administrative courses. I learned to type. I took bookkeeping, you know, all the admin courses. And when I was in the military, of course, my job was centered around administration and correspondence and that sort of thing. So since having exited the military, I was a secretary off and on for numerous years. I've done diverse administrative duties. And so I feel like between high school and the military, I was trained. And the one thing about the military and having been in at a young age like I was, I felt like those 3 years that I spent in the military matured me more than had I not been in the military, because even though I was on my own, I was still accountable to commanders and first sergeants, and, you know, so even though I was an adult living on my own, right, I was still accountable. But it matured me, I think, more than anything.
That's what we hear a lot.
Yeah.
Is there anything else that you would like to add? Any particular incident or experiences that you wanted to add that I have forgotten to ask? Don, can you think of anything that
you make me proud to have been in the military?
Oh, well, thank you.
When you were there.
Thank you.
It's a wonderful story.
Thank you.
Well, then why don't we conclude this interview? And I want to thank you for sharing your recollections with us for the benefit of our nation. This concludes the interview with Gail Elizabeth Davis. Thank you.